Fly me to the moon. Let me play among the stars. Let me, were we good?
Yeah. That's good. That's good.
You got to 10 seconds.
Rob, man, good to see you again.
Good to see you.
I briefly saw you when you recorded with Jonathan. So yeah. Quick shout out to Jonathan and People First, his
Absolutely.
Show. And I saw some of those clips and they were great. Yeah. And then I saw you again at the little cigar thing that I've mentioned a few times on the show. I had a blast. Awesome. It was amazing. Thank you for organizing that.
My pleasure.
Met
more
some
to come.
Great people and yeah. Had some great conversations. And it was a nice environment. I was thanking Jonathan over and over for it. So I'm looking forward to doing another one, hopefully in the near future.
For sure. Yeah, it turned out even better than I'd hoped. So there's more to come.
Well
sure.
done. Well done on that. Yeah. But I wanted you to get on the show because I think with recent events, I think everybody's got this one word on their minds. Mm-hmm. And that word is money. Just money, 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 trying to figure out what to do, how to survive. And listen, Canada's gone through worse. Other people before us right. have gone through worse. We can get through this, right? But sure. I wanted you to get on the show because I want to talk about what we can do, what we can plan for. You help people. You advise people on
for
that.
Sure. Yeah.
I don't know if you work with a lot of tradespeople in general or just all kinds of people in general that you speak with, you have clientele yeah. with. But I think construction is getting savvy to this kind of world, right?
They are more and more. Yeah, I've brought on my first few construction-related clients over the last year. That's a new thing. They're starting to turn on to the idea of, you know, managing the money and making decisions with data yeah. more than before. Not just going with the gut. As they grow, they find it's more important. They realize, you know, they make some mistakes. All of a sudden, like, wait, maybe I should, you know, tighten things up a little bit and have better information. So they're opening up to it.
We got a lot to talk about. So let me just share the information. CFO Collective, Rob Sinopri.
Yep.
Sinopri. No, did I say it right?
Yeah, that's how everyone says it.
No, I want to know how you...
Well, it's CI, Italian. Sinopri is the proper, but that I gave up on. It's like Jonathan. So he goes with Cinelli. You give up a long time
it's
ago.
It's actually Cinelli.
It's Cinelli, yeah.
So it's a whole, like Pacino kind of thing.
Yeah, it's CI.
Yeah, CI. Yeah. So once
Cappuccino,
it's CI,
right?
Cappuccino.
The same thing. CI.
There we go.
Right? We both gave up a long time ago.
www.cfo-collective.com. You can get him at Rob Sinopri at cfo-collective.com. And then his IG, brand spanking new, CFO_collective, right? Yep. And then also can find you on LinkedIn as well, too.
Of course, yeah. Just Google my name. It'll come up.
I want to begin with how did they do it back then? How did the older guys that we know that are 20 years, 30 years ahead of me, how did they do it back then when they try to save for the house, for the car, for how did they do things compared to today?
I don't have to tell you what's happened with the price of things.
Yeah, it's right? insane.
I mean, I remember my wife's grandparents buying a whole house in Etobicoke for $36,000. It was back in, I think, the mid-60s.
Like what, a 2,500 square foot? Usually a bungalow.
Yeah, it was a back split. Like back split,
side
huge
split.
Lot.
Yeah.
Now?
I'm
going to guess 2.5.
Someone was telling me about homes in St. Catharines, I think.
Yeah.
39, 80 deep.
New builds.
Less than 2,000 square.
Yeah.
1.7.
Okay, so over three then for the same house they paid $36,000 for. So how did you do it? You got the answer. Taxes were lower.
Yeah.
People got paid. Maybe they only made...
Wage was in line
maybe
with...
Maybe they only made $12,000 a year. But the house was $36,000.
So you knew in 10 years you could pay that off.
10, easily. 5.
5.
Because that's all you did.
Cars
you didn't go
were
on,
what?
Cars were... You can give
grand,
them away. Right.
If that.
10. Cars were half the price of the house. That's the scary part. Cars were half the price of the house, right? And so, and they didn't go on vacation. They didn't go out for dinner. So in 5 years, the house, the mortgage was gone. And here we are, 36,000 now, at least over 3 million. I'm not a real estate person.
And then they
I'm
started
looking,
saving, right? So they would just save in a regular save. Bank account. Collecting
yeah.
what?
Yeah, they were, you know, a lot of savings bonds.
Yes. Okay.
Right? And then over time that changed, obviously. And I'm talking about our background, right? Italian, Portuguese. I don't know. My wife's Portuguese. I told you yeah. that. I don't know about sort of other groups, but that's kind of how they did it.
Well, I know the Croatians did it. The Eastern Europeans did it the exact same way, too.
A lot of the Europeans did it the same way, for sure. But now the world's changed. It's completely changed. Like, I don't know how my kids are going to, without our help, how are they going to be able to afford property?
But that could also change, too, in the near future as well. and I'm talking about more taxation on your properties or your assets and things like that, that you, what they did back then would have handed it down to family members, right?
Right.
Their kids.
Right.
That's going to be challenging in the near future.
Tax-free, sell that house. Is that going to still exist? Who knows?
It's on the chopping block.
Why wouldn't it be? With everything going on, you know, they increase the inclusion rate for capital gains from 50 to 75%. Then they pulled that back.
Now, has that been passed? Because I, my understanding that
they never passed it
because
75%.
Because Parliament got prorogued, right? So then it never passed.
They never, that's right. They never passed it, but CRA started acting on
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
So there's a big mess now. I know, and I'm not a tax accountant, but my tax accountant network, they're going crazy because now they're going back and.
So they're challenging CRA.
No, they have to go back and get it back. So there's a whole piece of work now to go clean that up.
And the last thing you want to do is give a government too much money because then trying to get it back is a different story.
Of course. But then will that be back on the chopping block? Before they touch the houses, I think that's the first thing that's going to change. If it does. Let's not get into politics, but the government's going to need more money. The liberal spending plan is big. They're going to have to pay for it somehow, right?
So how does one survive today? How does one have the rose-colored glasses about buying a home and having a backyard? Or are we going to live in condos and just stay in condos and no backyard?
I think there's going to be a lot more condos. You probably agree.
Yeah.
I mean, density is only going to go up. They keep bringing immigrants in at this rate. The population just keeps going up. That's what's going to happen. It's just going to be more density, and that's the reality. And then affording a house, a lot of it's going to be, you're passing it down. We're going to take all the value in our house now, and we're going to give that to the kids, and they're going to use that for their house, and they're going to have to rely on past generations. But my thing is, I wonder if we're going to have to start moving backwards to the way we used to be, where, because right now it's like Starbucks, Uber Eats this. The spending is, it's just become
not for me
normal.
For the last few years. It's just, I don't understand it, right?
I just wonder if a lot of that's going to start getting pulled back because people look at it and say, well, if I want this, I have to sort of stop that, at least pull back on it. But we'll see. I don't know.
Do they begin with not owning, having ownership of a vehicle? So they get rid of the car. So they basically either take cabs or Uber everywhere they want to go, or they do car shares, which is like, I have to plan my travel plans, like when I want to go navigate something or move something, yeah, go to one place, visit my parents in the suburbs, or like, is that what's going to happen?
Fewer cars. Well, listen, now? A lot more people are comfortable with Uber than they used to be. Car ride sharing way more than they used to be. But the convenience is still there. I think actually we're going to just start looking more like Europe, where you just rent for the rest of your life. Right?
But Europe used to be a generational dwelling handed down to the next family. Mm-hmm. You actually got to the point, Italians and Portuguese, everybody used to do this, and some probably still do some of it, but each floor belonged to each generation kind of idea. And then as people passed on, then they kind of went up the ranks, so to speak, right? And then they took care of the home.
And if you had property, you added to it.
You added
to it.
Right,
like my mom's extended family in Sora, they had a big piece of property, and they just kept building more houses or adding more levels on top, and it became a compound.
But how do we make that a reality here in Canada?
Oh, I don't know. That's not...
Because there's two options on the table right now. Either I'm speaking to groups of people saying I'm leaving, and the other ones are going to, I'm going to ride it out. But are you going to ride it out because it's eventually going to get better, or is this going to eventually get just to the point where it's so bad that you can't sustain here?
I've got to imagine if you're going to ride it out, you think it's going to get better.
But will it? It's been 10 years already.
I don't know. Don't ask me.
Yeah, that's
I have no idea. Like the next... Like you said before we started, the next 4 years on both sides of the border, we don't know what's going to happen. So
you have two leaders that are running things for the next 4 years.
Right.
Basically.
Yeah. Assuming we don't have, I mean, it is a minority government, but assuming they don't need much to stay in power and the few NDP seats support them, they'll stay in power. And
yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah.
So let's assume you've got these two groups for the next 4 years. And with my clients, what I'm talking about now is what we're calling the uncertainty tax.
Predicting?
Because things are so uncertain, everybody's pulling back. Everybody's being cautious. And in business owners hate uncertainty. I don't have to tell you that, right? So
nope. You can't grow. You have no idea where to grow.
Right. Do I buy this equipment? Do I expand my building? Do I take on new trucks? Do I hire more people? No, 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 no. We're just going to wait and see. Are we going to wait and see 4 years?
That's a long time.
It's a long time. Now, I don't know. This morning, it's May 2nd. This morning, the job numbers came out in the States and they were way above expectation.
So work's happening now there.
They were really strong.
Yeah.
But is that a lag from last month? What happens if tariffs really kick in? I don't know. Who knows? It's that uncertainty tax.
I'm just trying to figure out. I mean, I've had conversations with other people on the show. You know, you've got tradespeople that were making a certain amount of money back in the 70s, 80s, and 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And they're making almost similar amounts today when they're actually removing all the taxes and all the fees that are associated with those dollars, right?
For sure.
So there's no benefit to working more hours. Back then, the older generation, you worked more hours, you made more money, you got to save more, you sacrificed time with your family, you lost family hours, mm-hmm. which in my opinion are more important than pay hours, right? But you did it to provide for your family, to pay off the mortgage, pay off the car, buy a house for your kids, like things like that, right? Mm-hmm. You never did it for vacations or coffees, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah, you did it for...
But today, how do you do it?
That's a great question. Today, I think people have to make a conscious choice to live life more like they did before, to not spend at every opportunity. You know, I hate to say it. It's like Netflix, Prime, Paramount.
It's all gone, Rob.
Cell phone, cell phone, cell phone.
A cell phone. That's all I'm on.
My kids, I think, and I think it's absolutely normal. I think they think I'm going to pay for their cell phone for the rest of their lives. Like it's just a thing.
They'll get disconnected one day.
Well, one day, of course. Yeah. Yeah. But it's those plans. It's the cell phones. Again, it's the what I'll call small luxuries. It's the small luxuries that add up.
Is right? I look at it like, okay, so I think I've been saying on the show for the last year, I went down from, it was Disney, it was Netflix, it was Amazon, and I finally got rid of Amazon, so I'm not, no streaming services.
Nothing.
Nothing.
How'd you do it?
Because I don't care if I watch the latest, greatest, whatever.
What about your family?
I don't have a family, so they probably all have them. Like them, I don't know about them, but they probably have their Netflixes and they all have their services up. My thought process is it's distraction. The economy sucks. I'm really nervous about my dollars not growing. I am going to go home. Honey, there's a new show on Netflix. It's about this. It's about that. And they're like, you get distracted for 2 hours. So you have your Netflix evenings. You have your Amazon evenings. And then I started thinking to myself, I don't miss that. I really don't miss it, right? Mm-hmm. So if I hear a lot about something that I want to go watch, you see the table, I go watch a movie. So I'm actually on a Cine Club membership. Okay. So I go and I...
Hence all the tickets here.
But it's smart though. I paid $109 for the whole year and I can go get a free movie every single month and I can watch a second movie in the same month for $9.99.
Yeah.
So I'm paying a lot less than what they're charging, which is $20 to $25, right? Yeah. So it's like I'm safe because I knew I was going to go there at least two or three times a month. Yeah. That's the extent of my entertainment distraction level, right? So I don't miss the streaming at all. I don't have music streaming. I don't do that because I have physical CDs and I have physical vinyl from yesterday. Right. Or occasionally I'll go into a store and I'll buy a physical. I'm still surprised at how much vinyl is today.
Well, that's a
different thing.
It's a small luxury now.
It's a small luxury, but that's the extent of it. Other than that, it's a cell phone because you got to be conscious of it. Like we all. It was nice to hear about Nespresso. Mm. Back in the day, what did your parents do? My mom always was a Nescafe woman, and she would have her little jar. Oh. And you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, of course.
And that jar cost, what was it? I don't know, $5 for a jar or something like that?
Yeah, and it lasted forever.
If you took all the Nespresso pods that you have on a weekly basis,
right,
and then you try to get the same amount of coffee that you had in one jar, you would be paying hundreds of dollars for coffee. So they were smart with creating those pods because they know that you're selling them on Amazon or you're buying them in stores or whatever, and you're paying maybe 60 or 75 cents each pod.
Right.
But then you need 100 of those pods to be equivalent to that $5 charge, a bottle, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I think people are going to, like you said, they're going to start to wake up to that where I'm not going to go out to the barista in the local neighborhood, get a $9 croissant and buy a $5, $10 latte and then sit down and eat that because you can't do that every single day for 5 days a week. And then twice on Sunday.
But people are still doing it. This is the problem.
Because have they given up on... I've spoken to young people who are like, I'm not even going to get a driver's license because I can't afford a car. But what if you get a job that gives you a car? You need a driver's license. If you are a business owner, subcontractor, or client, you know that trust in this industry is huge. And Contract Alp helps build that. Not only do they get a solid contract for your projects, they built in an e-signature tool for you and your clients. The contract dashboard also has a digital live log that records every step of the project, plus a rate and review system for both the contractor and the client. This means more transparency and accountability for everyone. Stop running your business on an estimate and a handshake. Protect yourself with Contract Alp. Book your free demo or sign up today at www.contractapp.ca and use promo code TCL to get your first month for free. This message is proudly supported by The Construction Life.
Yeah, it's interesting because the way I think about what's happening with, for example, all the streaming services, right? And these small luxuries, the term I use is bread and circuses.
Yeah.
Okay. This is what the Romans used to do.
Yeah, the Romans.
Exactly. This is not new.
I know.
Distract the population so that you keep them, you know, occupied and busy, and they're not going to bother you while you're doing what you need to do in the background. So all of these streaming services are numbing us, right? So, you know, it's the streaming services and social media and the 30-second soundbite. And so no one's going deep anymore. No one's really understanding issues deeply. And I shouldn't say no one. A lot of people, the majority of people,
yeah.
they're getting their little sound bites and they're making decisions based on that. They're watching their streaming service. The evening is gone. It's bread and circuses. It's just a little more technically advanced.
I'll give you an example because I do go on social media to pay attention to what's going on and trying to figure out stuff, right? I'll occasionally catch myself doom scrolling and then I'll call myself out on that and stop it.
Right.
But I did notice that there was more engagement and far more interaction with a lot of my followers and people that DM me about the Leafs than the election. And what does that tell
you? Are you surprised?
I'm not surprised by that.
Okay.
But there should have been twice as much interaction from the Leafs game on the election process.
Right.
It should have been. Because that was a really important election for Canadian history, right? But the Leafs were far more important.
Manny, they had to move the French debate because it was conflicting with a Habs game.
I think that's wrong.
That's what else do you need to know?
Yeah. So it's the whole distraction thing, right?
It's a distraction thing. Yeah.
So how does one get not distracted and focus
on? Great question, because it is addictive.
Yeah.
And it's so easy. So it takes a lot of self-discipline. It's easy. So, you know, you work long days.
Yeah.
You get home, you're exhausted, you have dinner. You just want to check out.
You want to turn off society. Like, you don't want to, and then you'll face the problems tomorrow.
Yeah.
But I don't have kids, but I know a lot of people that have kids.
Yeah.
And they're really nervous about their kids.
Sure.
What they're going to get when they get older, or what's going to be left for them when they get older. And
my big concern is opportunity.
Yeah.
Right? Like the opportunities that I had growing up here, are they going to be here?
Will the kids leave and look for opportunity elsewhere? But where do you go?
That's the question.
When you have nations that are in a similar boat.
Right. So, you know, do you go to Western Europe? And okay, so you'll get by, not a lot of opportunity, but the climate's beautiful, the environment's nice, the food is
it just a different distraction?
I'm not a good person to ask because I cannot stand winter, like, at all.
Yeah,
so I don't find
the
weather a distraction. I find it an important thing in my life. So the sooner I can spend more time in Florida or somewhere warm in January and February, the better. And for me, it's not a distraction. It's just a quality of life, right?
Just your mindset.
Mindset, being able to go outside January, you know, exercise outside, get fresh air. My knees are wrecked. I can't ski anymore. So
get older.
What am I going to do in the winter?
Yeah.
Right? So you go to Europe, okay, even if you can
afford
get your passport, your limited opportunities, you're going to live a very basic life there, but that's okay. There's nothing wrong. Like, it's fine. You know, it could be fine. The U.S., I mean, the U.S., there's people are working. There's lots going on. There's other challenges in the U.S. You know, it's different challenges than here. Well, where else are you going to go?
But our own government's going to make it difficult for us to leave because they're talking about introducing an exit tax, right?
Well, I mean, they already do. Like, if you do leave, there's a whole...
You know, if you cancel your passport.
They treat you... Yeah. If you become a non-resident for tax purposes, you don't have to necessarily give up your passport, but if you become a non-resident, then they treat you as if you died. Hmm. You sell everything. You pay all your taxes. They say, okay, now you can go. And then you don't have to worry about paying Canadian tax going forward. Right?
And you're only allowed in the country, 6 months minus a day or something like that? Extended time.
Yeah, no, sure. Because as soon as you come back for an extended period of time and you establish that you're
a resident again,
then taxes back on. And you did all that for nothing. So if you're going to cut your ties with Canada, you really have to be sure you're cutting ties.
Yeah, you're cutting it for good.
Right? You're not planning on coming back. That doesn't mean you can't come back. Obviously, come back and visit.
You can come back and visit. You just can't come back and live and work. Couple months
here,
a couple months
there. Yeah, if you start working here, if you start buying property here, if you start that, you put that at risk. So...
You think this younger generation's like, since they can't afford bricks and mortar work here, that they're just going to look online for employment?
That's what people in other parts of the world do, right?
Everybody's going online.
How many offshore jobs are there? Philippines, India,
everywhere,
Puerto Rico. So everyone's looking for that way to make money from wherever they are, and technology's allowing for that for sure.
So I guess the other thing that I was talking with a lot of people was they're going to start to do projects under the table to avoid paying taxes as an option to survive. You can only do so much of that.
That's getting harder and harder, right?
A target might be put on you.
Yeah, it's just getting harder and harder.
It's going to be a challenge, but I understand why you're doing that, because they'd rather make $100,000 and try to keep as much of that $100,000 for that year of work, right?
Yeah. I just don't know how easy that is anymore.
Back in the day, it was a lot easier.
Sure. It was really easy. It was a lot less necessary, a lot more normal, way easier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how does one survive then? In construction, or even a small business owner, subcontractor, financially speaking, paying all your right taxes, you can't survive.
It's going to be a simpler life, I think. It's really going to be.
So just basically downgrade a bunch of stuff. You have
my kids, we live in Mississauga like you.
Yeah.
If they want to go downtown for a night out, it's hundreds of dollars between the Ubers. Like, even if we drive them there, we're not picking them up. It's 2 o'clock in the morning. Between the transportation, it's $15 a drink, maybe more. There's cover charge. Each one of them, it's a couple hundred dollars for a night out. So they don't do it almost at all at this point. And so you see all that sort of happening, and you're like, yeah, you have to make these choices if in the end you want to be able to own something, build a life for yourself. Yeah, I don't know. There's no easy answers. Manny, I wish I could. If I had the answers, I wouldn't be here. I'd be somewhere else.
There's no easy answers.
Printing money, right?
Because of the whole uncertainty.
Right.
We just don't know what's going to unfold.
We have no idea.
And until we see it start to unfold, then we start to plan how to attack that.
Right.
Or react to it.
But you have what's happening in the US, you have our new government here, and you have what everyone else in the world, all the other countries, how they're responding to this situation. So there's a lot of moving pieces.
So why can't we, as small business owners, do exactly what the wealthy are doing? And I say hide assets and things like that. Move money around in safe havens. Is that going to start to increase for people?
That's just very expensive. You have to have a certain level of wealth to make it worth
doing it.
Just setting it up.
Yeah.
Imagine the lawyers and all the fees and just setting it up. You have to have a certain level of wealth to make it worth it. Even something less, complex as an offshore structure, even a Canadian family trust and hold co structure. Even that, to have that, you have to have a business that is valuable enough to make it worth all that effort and all the fees.
And there's also an annual maintenance of those things.
The fees are all every year.
Yeah.
I mean, you talk about the most complex structures domestically. It's the family trust with the life insurance policy and the hold co's for the real estate and the investment hold co's and your operating company, and all of that costs a lot of money.
Is it five figures or six figures? It depends, I guess.
It depends. Okay. But five figures.
Easily.
On a maintenance basis, five figures easily. Just setting it up, you're in six figures.
Wow.
Right? So, but if you have a business that's worth $10 million,
then it's worth it.
Then it's worth it.
But I don't know anybody who has businesses like that right now. That's the thing about it.
Yeah.
I guess everyone's just figuring out the future, trying to figure out what to set up, to try to line up ducks, to figure out what to do. They don't know what to do.
Well, the other side of it too is when you look at opportunities for people going forward, there's the offshoring. Technology is allowing competition from outside Canada for young people with tech skills and tech backgrounds. AI is going to change everything. Mm-hmm. It's going to happen. It's a matter of when, not if. So how does that impact them? At the end of the day, one of the few areas that's still going to have, let's call it opportunity, is in the trades.
Have you been hearing about all the U.S.-based companies that are coming up and gobbling up small mom-and-pop trade businesses? Specifically no. Mechanical and plumbing and electrical?
No, but that doesn't surprise me at all.
They want to control
right.
The rates.
Right. So, this is the trend in every industry.
Yeah.
Automotive dealerships, they're all owned by a handful of companies now. You can see it across the board. Restaurants are all changed now. Everyone's trying to get to some scale and where they're reducing competition so they can control price so they can make money.
Well, Canada's done that really well with telecommunications.
Well.
The price of every R3 big three.
There's no competition.
There is no competition.
And I don't even mean cell phones. There's no competition.
Yeah. Or even, I would say, as far as even cable or streaming providers, right? It's the same thing.
How many big banks do we have?
It's all the same.
There's five. I don't know. There's a handful of big banks.
I did notice recently that all of a sudden there's been announcements of increasing fees. All kinds of fees are being increased now.
Sure.
Whether mostly online fees, transfers fees.
Sure.
Debits and credits online.
And it used to be that the banks were the banks and insurance companies were insurance companies, but now the banks are also the insurance companies. So this is a uniquely challenged country, being so geographically large with such a small population.
And we're not producing enough money and we're not sustaining enough income as individuals to sustain all that.
Yeah.
Like back in the day, I started with the back in the day thing because, like you said, they were maybe making 12 grand a year. They bought a $36,000 house. They probably bought a $10,000 or $12,000 car, mm-hmm. but they were making 12 grand a year. So, you know, you're making 60 grand over 5 years. That's a lot right. of money.
And
right?
they were keeping most of that.
Most of it too. So they were paying their fair share of income tax on that. And also if you're in the construction industry, you probably were saving a lot more because if it was cash.
Or you were doing a lot of cash jobs.
Yeah.
Yeah,
for so sure. So it was sustainable then. But now you want to buy a brand new house. It's 1 point something. Pick the number after that. Or it's a condo. It's still 1 point something. Mm-hmm. And then you have maintenance fees on top of that. You have your mortgage.
Well, that's the issue with the condos. It's like every...
Maintenance fees are every sometimes month. Larger than the mortgage
Well, in
payment.
The beginning, they start out small. And then as the business the building ages, they just go up and up and up and up. And the more amenities the building has, the more that's going
to
go up.
That's a whole other argument for me. Because, I mean, why not just build a building to last a lot longer to begin with? So then you don't need to require using maintenance fees until maybe 20, 30 plus years.
You tell me. You're in the industry.
They do it because of that.
Right.
It's money. It's reoccurring revenue for them. That's what it is. But a lot of that's what you're going to be left with. But then, okay, so we've already gotten rid of the car. You're getting rid of all the perks. You're getting rid of all this stuff. And going out to a Leaf game is going to be a once-in-a-lifetime kind of thing that you do. It ain't going to be a weekly thing anymore.
Especially a Leaf game. Go down to Buffalo, go to a Sabres game. It'll be a lot cheaper.
I know plenty of people who used to drive that, do the tailgating, and just stay there, and it's done.
Sure. Yeah.
But it's cost-effective that way. Mm-hmm. I'm just worried about the young generation just not being able to do it and putting their hands up and leaving. But where do you go? That's why I keep on going. Where do you go? It's going to be the same somewhere else.
The hustlers are going to go to the States. The hustlers.
Are we talking about the regular states that we're talking about, like Florida, Texas? We're talking about those kinds of states.
California is always going to be a big economy.
But California's a tax problem too.
California's, well,
they're pushing a lot of people out of there because of taxes, right?
There's a lot of issues in a lot of the states. Like, where, I don't know where.
Well, Texas and Florida is zero income tax.
Right.
So you only pay sales tax.
Fair enough.
You make 100 grand?
Yeah, you pay federal income tax, but you don't pay state income tax.
So you save a lot of your money you make.
Yeah. Yep. And their sales taxes in Florida are lower. I don't remember about Texas, but.
Similar. I think they're comparable. But the thing is, the point is that you don't pay the taxes that we're paying, right?
Mm-hmm. You don't get the services we get.
Well, what services are we getting here that are covering
all again? Right? My hope is if life here does become more expensive and people have to scale back, that we're at least able to fix those things that we value, that the hospitals, the doctor situation, the schools. If we can keep those in good working order, then maybe everything else you kind of live with, because you compare it to the rest of the world, you say, well, this is just still better. Okay?
Yeah.
But if this all, if these fall away too, so if taxes are, you know, if you end up paying more than half your money to the government for taxes, and the schools are not good, the streets aren't safe, healthcare is not good, and winter's awful. Why? Then you got to ask, what's the point?
Yeah.
Right? So I don't want to be a doomsday guy. I'm not trying to sound like that. But I think if you keep those things that made Canada so special in decent working order, I don't know if they're necessarily going to be the way they used to be. We keep having the population grow the way it is, it's going to put pressure. But if we can find a way to keep it at least adequate, then okay, so maybe I'm not going to be swimming in money. But I can make a life, right? I can make a life. Okay. But if those other things fall apart, then I'm really concerned that.
At Premier Physiotherapy and Sports Medicine, they don't just treat symptoms with the subpar standard experience people have come to know. Listen up, trying to skip this ad? That's exactly how you strained your back last time. The clinicians there provide accurate, specific diagnosis and evidence-based treatment techniques to provide clear and personalized effective management plans. They thrive when they hear people say that they've tried physio before and it didn't work, because they raise the standard of what physiotherapy should be by managing your issue. Whether you're recovering from injury, awaiting surgery, trying to resolve lingering pain, or striving for peak performance, they use the latest equipment and proven methods to restore your ability and confidence. From physiotherapy and massage therapy to chiropractic care, nutrition counseling, and psychotherapy, their multidisciplinary team supports both your body and mind every step of the way. Discover the difference and book your consultation today at premierphysiotherapy.com or call 905-417-9991. Premier Physiotherapy and Sports Medicine. Your goal is their goal. This message is proudly supported by The Construction Life. Well, I mean, with more immigration coming in, it's going to put a strain on the healthcare system.
It is, sure.
I was recently a part of the healthcare system, being in a hospital for my mom. And also, I've got another friend of mine who was part of it as well, too. And mm-hmm. It was just it wasn't the experience that I remember being a kid, where I would do something stupid and break something. And then you show up there and you're out pretty quickly.
Yeah.
This wasn't the case for both of us, right? Mm-hmm. It's a different system now.
Or you're out too quickly.
Yeah.
Because they just want you out.
Yeah.
They need the space. Yeah. They need the space in the hallway.
It was funny to see it as a business instead of as a healthcare institution. That's what I recently saw. I saw it's a business. This is no different than any other business, and the product is a human being.
Yep.
Which was weird as an adult. Maybe I didn't see it as a kid that way, but
I don't know if when we were younger
it was like that.
It was like that. I don't
think so.
Yeah. No.
So that's why I saw it this way recently. Yep. And I was like, it's kind of weird. I basically told my friend, just don't get sick.
Great.
But that doesn't work either.
It's a good strategy.
Yeah, it doesn't work either, because you don't know what's going to happen, if something's going to happen, right? Sure. I'm sure that your phone was probably ringing off the hook after the election from clients and talking and trying to figure out were they reaching out to you just looking for answers or looking for some level of comfort?
They were just frustrated.
They were just frustrated.
A lot of the business owners were just frustrated with the...
Is anybody happy that Canada's in the state that it is right now?
In the state that it's in?
Yeah. Is it plus for them?
I just don't think anyone saw this direction that like I know President Trump talked about tariffs before he got elected. He did, but I don't think anyone ever expected to go after Canada the way he did because it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
So I think this has just been a big shock for everyone. Now, listen, most of my clients so far have been okay. No direct impacts. That's my clients. And there's been a lot of, we're not going to do this yet. We'll hold this off. Okay. But it's the uncertainty piece that's dragging everything down. That's the problem that I'm seeing right now. The uncertainty tax is just putting a wet blanket on everything. And even if they keep stalling things and don't do anything firm, for us here, it's going to continue. That uncertainty tax is going to continue.
That's the problem that we had. We had so much uncertainty for so long, and then the election was called, and we were expecting a little bit of certainty coming out of that election, and all we did was continue the uncertainty train.
I go even farther back. Like, we got through COVID. Yeah. That was huge uncertainty.
Yeah.
Okay, they were like, okay, we're free of that. Okay, we're not happy right now with how things are going with the government, and now the president's come in and he's causing issues. Okay, let's change things up. And, you know, I don't want to get too much into politics, but certainly people I speak to believe that our prime minister now is going to be the best person to deal with Trump. And I'm not saying that's yes or no.
Yeah.
But that's great. But Trump as well will pass. What about after that?
Right. Dude, 4 years is a long time from now.
Yeah, 4 years. 4 years of both on both sides. Both sides. We'll see what happens.
So I guess when I talk to older people that have gone through bad recessions back then, mm-hmm. obviously the Americans went through a harsher time with 2009. Harper avoided that with his protections, I guess, with the mortgage and the way your stress tests. He designed it that way so then people wouldn't be overspending or buying something and getting into that position that the Americans got into. But then the Americans got out of that. They got out of that with a lot of loss. A lot of people lost their homes. Mm-hmm. But they also bought many homes that they shouldn't have bought because they were all mm-hmm. unsecured loans and all kinds of stuff. That was their thing. And they got out of that business.
But there's a lot of data to say that they didn't actually fix the problem in the States. That it still exists.
Really?
And that there's still risk. That if something trips, it could create another set of bank failures down there. So we were joking and commenting about the banks here before. There's not a lot of them. There's not a lot of competition. But we came out of that because our banks are federal and very strong and have very strict rules. We don't have a very entrepreneurial banking system where a lot of small banks come out and compete. They do it. They still have that down there.
Yeah.
So there's still a lot of risk from that perspective. And so we came out of that okay. We were definitely, I mean, it was a global recession, but we weren't directly impacted like they were in the States, so many people losing everything. And then we got through COVID primarily by printing money. Now we're seeing the results of that inflation, and everybody did it. Again, I'm not just blaming Canada. Globally, everybody printed money, caused inflation everywhere. We're going to slow down now, I think. I'm pretty sure that...
We're still going to spend. We aren't, government is.
The government is going to spend, as they do in recessions, to try to, you know, stimulate the economy. Everybody else is going to pull back.
What's the better move?
I just hope that we're able to push through this and maintain our auto sector. Because for me, that's the biggest risk long term. You know, what do we do with oil and gas? And if we lose the auto sector, which is the primary part of our manufacturing industry, it's never coming back. It won't come back. If it goes, it's gone.
You know what, Rob? Like, listen, I'm not a big business person. I always speak to much smarter people than when it comes to that thing. what I find interesting is that distraction, and we talked about this earlier, is the key to everything here. And right now we're talking about possibly losing auto plants to the U.S. because these manufacturers don't want to pay these tariffs. Mm-hmm. And we've seen, I think, Audi or VW, which is all owned by Audi and Porsche and everybody like that, they're setting up a shop in the U.S. now to avoid the tariffs, right? Mm-hmm. So I know that, you know, I just saw on the news today, because this is the only ticker that I get when I watch news, right? Right. I go by and I see a ticker and I see something, right? On the front there, right? Because I don't have I don't have cable. I don't, so, and then I don't trust
the only thing you see.
I don't trust the media, right? So then I read what I can, and I saw that GM just got rid of the third shift.
Yeah.
So obviously that's a sign of we don't have enough cars being produced and we have to scale back. So that when I read that, I read people not working now.
Yeah.
I see a percentage of people not working that are skilled to work in that plant, right? I see all this magic trick happening, but I honestly believe, you brought up AI, I strongly believe that AI is going to come in and overtake the human being in an auto plant situation eventually in our lifetime. So while this worry about plants being shut down, if I'm a business owner, a car manufacturer, and I'm weighing a tariff happening or moving my plant to the US and maybe making it fully robotic, I might go this fully robotic version and avoid tariffs and not have to deal with human beings and pay them a wage or pensions. So like that might be happening on the back burner with them.
Well, that's two different things. But like the choice to move your plant short term is, do we just want to avoid tariffs?
But is it short term or is it long term?
Well, it depends what you define as short and long term.
Well, the question is, like, everyone wants to talk about Trump in 4 years and everything like that. I start thinking, that's not my question to ask. My question is, what happens after Trump? Who will it continue on the Republican train, or will it continue on a new Democratic train? We don't know.
But this is my point for Canada, which is, it's not just the assembly plant. Every car that gets assembled here has a massive spin-off effect of industry around it.
Yeah.
That's, for me, the key. It's not just the assembly. If the assembly plant goes, the auto parts manufacturers and all the peripheral businesses will follow because they need to be right next to the plant. Right? So for me, it's a larger discussion. So that's why if the plants go, that's going to be a huge challenge for us. Right? And even if they stayed and there's AI and more automation, we're still making something here. Okay, so automation and machines replacing people has been happening since the Industrial Revolution. Yep. So it's not going to change. But as long as we still have jobs here where we're designing, engineering, creating some value, at least that's something. If it goes, it all goes. Right? So that's my big concern around automotive. It's a really important sector for us.
And so if it leaves, it really hurts us. But also the same thing with oil out west. If it leaves, it really hurts us as well.
Well, I mean, it's there. We just have to decide how to use it.
The other concern I have is, like, if you're a corporation and you're in a different country, whether it be Asia or it be Europe or what have you, do you come to Canada and set up shop here? Is Canada an option to set up a corporation here?
To what end? It's a
small
population in a large country.
Yeah.
Right?
It's mostly dense in one particular area, right?
Pockets of population spread out from each other.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very expensive country to operate in, and that's the reality, right? Part of the reason why we pay more here than they do in the States is because it's just more expensive to operate here. We've got climate to deal with. We've got long distances to deal with. You know, if we want everyone to have high-speed internet, that's very expensive because you get these remote towns, and it's just the infrastructure costs more. Everything costs more.
It's so insane, yeah, when I heard about how it's cheaper to ship to the U.S. than it is to ship across Canada.
Sure.
Your starting point is Canada, but it's cheaper to go across.
It's cheaper,
than it is to the States.
Yeah. You look at the truck routes and even the train routes. Like, you go, CN Rail goes down, and it drops below into the States at one point and then back up.
Yeah.
So of course it's cheaper, right? So it's interesting times.
Wouldn't it be best though to start creating something here in Canada to create a workforce, to start creating jobs, to start building things in our own backyard. And I don't know.
What?
That's the question.
Make what?
I know. What do we make?
Right.
It's not cars. You know,
it could be. It was.
At some point. Sure, it was.
You know, I mean, and if we can find a way to get through this period and we're able to hang on to some of it, because we were already losing a lot of car production to Mexico.
Yeah.
And a little bit to the southern U.S. It was already happening.
Yeah.
This could finish it. Right? So I hope it doesn't, but the risk is there.
So, well, I mean, since both the Liberal government's been a little while, it's all about sustainability and green and everything like that. Why are we not building more and more sustainability green products that are being manufactured here for global purposes?
Listen, that's a strategy that they talk about.
It's not actually happening, though.
You don't see a lot of it, but the government does invest a lot in R&D. It does do a lot of support for research and development work, but I don't know if anything happens with it.
At Maple Overhead Garage Doors, they're not just opening doors, they're opening possibilities. Serving the greater Toronto area with top quality garage doors in steel, wood, fiberglass, flush mount, and full view aluminum, Maple delivers style, strength, and satisfaction for both residential and commercial spaces. With years of experience, unmatched craftsmanship, and the next level service, your neighbors will be jealous, but your garage door will speak for itself. Visit www.maplegaragedoors.com, email them at maplegaragedoors@hotmail.com, or even call them at 905-738-9231. Follow them on social at Maple Doors and discover why quality, knowledge, and experience live at Maple. Maple Overhead Garage Doors, built to impress, made to last. This message is proudly supported by The Construction Life. How quickly you think you'll see something? It just started, right? So obviously it was this week. It just started.
I think the main focus for the next 6 to 8 months is just hammering out a deal with the U.S. on trade. That's going to be the focus for the very, very near term. Figure out what that looks like so we can start...
Certainty.
So we get some certainty, and now we can start working on...
Then you can run a business.
Yeah, you can say, okay, if these are the rules, fine. Then let's figure out how to make money in these rules. The problem right now is there's no rules. They keep changing. The goalposts keep moving. Right? How do you plan? How do you...
Just banter back and forth.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I guess it's banter federally and provincially back and forth.
Well, I mean, I don't know if you saw what the premier in Alberta has been talking about over the last day.
Oh, yeah.
So.
She's concerned for her province.
And she has plans and she has things she wants to do. And the federal government has consistently gotten in the way of that. And so they've just had enough.
Listen, if I had a backyard and there was a wealth of something in that backyard...
There was money in the ground.
Give me a shovel.
Am I not going to dig it up?
Give me a shovel.
Right. Right.
Right. That's my perspective
and,
of it.
And we're struggling here to pay for things. And
we know that there's wealth in the ground. It's there. Yeah. There's countries around the world that want it.
Honestly, I think it's Norway. I'm sure it's Norway. It's one of the Scandinavian countries. And they have lots of offshore oil. And I'm pretty sure it's Norway. I'm drawing a blank now. But they have built up an entire sovereign fund. Everything they earn from that oil is meant for the common good for their country. And that sovereign fund pays for healthcare, schools, infrastructure. There is a proven model. I don't understand why we're not following it.
I've been saying that about construction forever. There's lots of proven models in other countries of what they've been doing regarding sustainability or just building in general construction-wise, and they're never applied here.
Right.
Why does it have to be a homegrown Canadian or, mostly Quebec-based company that has to provide this? Why can't we just take the technology and work with them and bring it here?
Great question.
Because we can get the workforce here making it happen.
Yep.
And then now you've got profit, income, work, jobs.
We have a housing crisis. So maybe the way that we're doing construction now is not the answer. Right? Maybe the answer is modular. I don't know. But there's other places in the world that have been doing different things successfully. Let's go figure out what they're doing.
I think there's a certain percentage of the population in Canada, if you've given them the option to go build your own structure in rural areas of Canada, let them go and let them build it. But there's a lot of red tape and development fees that are associated with it where they're not allowing you to do that. Mm-hmm. But if you've got an acreage in the middle of nowhere, far away from the epicenter of density of population,
right,
let that Canadian citizen build their dwelling. That's their dwelling on their land, and they build it. As long as they build it correctly, structurally, you sign off, engineer, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But get rid of the government red tape associated with building that structure where their mindset is, no, you can't do that. You're not allowed to do that. We don't have services coming to you. But I'm trying to get off the grid. Like, I don't want to be using your services.
We don't need the, we can have a septic system.
Yeah.
We've got a well.
It's been proven around the world that you can do this. You don't need government to build a house. That's the problem I see. You don't need it.
Right.
But they're so ingrained in it that it's forcing, doesn't matter where you park it. If it's parked 5 hours away from the nearest civilization, they still are a part of that.
There's still a lot of red tape. Yeah, and I'm on the board for Habitat for the Mississauga Halton Durham group, and we struggle with that all the time. The fees and the government red tape create so much headwind and additional cost that's difficult to deliver on that mission, and even for a organization that's meant to do affordable housing projects, the government's like, yeah, no, that's, you know, maybe they make, it's a special call to waive a development fee. They have to go, it has to go through council, and it's a one-off choice. It's not, so it hits everywhere.
All it does is just stop any progress.
Yep. So, and I don't have to tell you, you want to get a building permit in Toronto, how long does that take?
It's ridiculous, right? And it's not that, it's just the development fees associated with it is ridiculous. So a structure that costs $1 million, we know, just generalizing speaking, 300,000 of that goes to the government. Doesn't go to construction.
Is it that much?
Yes, it's a little bit more than 300. It's one third.
Wow.
It's government, development fees, taxes, and all kinds of stuff. That's too high.
Yes. Yep.
We broke it down on a past show with Ryan Brokowski. He broke it down. He got all the knowledge. And it goes to the bus routes. It goes to the sanitation. It goes, it's like whenever you have a division or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I started arguing, it makes no sense when you want to build a condo in a new parking lot in downtown Toronto. Why are we paying so much into infrastructure that's already there?
It's already, yeah.
But right. It's just there because they've been collecting those dollars. So they're going to continue collecting those dollars.
Of course, they need
the funds. But it's making each of those units one third more expensive. Mm-hmm. For the end user. That's the problem. So I guess you've got a bunch of money coming in that the government doesn't want to let go of.
Probably a good explanation.
Once you give it, they don't take it back.
Yeah. When's the last time you've heard taxes
no,
going down?
No, it doesn't work that way.
The carbon tax is gone.
Don't worry. It's going to quickly go back up, right?
Well, it's going to be put somewhere else.
It would just be hidden somewhere else. Distraction.
Yeah, you just had to read the platform. He told you where he put it. Yeah.
Yeah, into internal combustion.
He put it onto the manufacturer. So people think that they just got rid of it.
But the manufacturer is going to increase the end user retail price.
They just put it somewhere else.
That's all it is.
Right. And it was in the
plan. It's right there.
Just had to read the plan. Yeah, so it's not gone. So yes, there's instant relief today on the price of gas. You can see that and feel it. It's significant. But it's just going to come back in quiet ways that all of a sudden we're just complaining now because... Now this costs more, and now that costs more. What's going on? They don't ever give it back or reduce it.
So at what point are you going to get a generation that's just going to go, I'm out of here? I know I was born here in Canada. I know you guys
immigrated to Canada. But again, where are you going to go? Where are you going to... You
find smaller pockets of places that are not as ingrained with this kind of crap. I don't know what that is. I don't know where that is.
You have to have the right to go there too, Manny. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Like, how do you...
You can't just show up and go, hey, we want to live here.
I'm here. I'm from Canada. I want to live here now, and I want to work here. Doesn't happen.
I thought there was some little towns in Italy that were offering that. You can stay there for 5 years, and you can buy something, and they'll assist you with it, but you have to commit to building this, and they'll give you some relief, tax relief.
Yeah, so if you can work remotely, if you can make a living online, that's an option. But if you want to go there and get a job there.
I know Portugal offers it.
Yeah.
They'll offer you, I think it's 10 years income tax free if you move there and sustain employment there and buy a house there.
Portugal is doing a good job of encouraging that kind of development. You know, things like if you were a sort of high potential successful person who left Portugal, that if you came back, they gave you 10 years of 50% off your income tax. So they're doing things to try to encourage people to go back or to go and add value. And I think that that's great, but you have to be, you know, working somehow generally online, remotely, where you can generate that revenue. I guess it is quite possible. So there's certainly that option. I mean, you know, it would be, you know, these are beautiful places to live, right? They're very, the architecture, all of it, it's beautiful. So yeah, if you can do that, and that's, yeah. If you are a high value individual that's going to produce and add value to the world, there'll always be opportunity for you. It just might not be here.
So maybe it's just a matter of they'll go online and look for pockets around the world that are kind of fitting those check the boxes moments, right? And then you go there and you inquire about them. Mm-hmm. I mean, you start applying for citizenship. It's like, I mean, I'm fortunate enough to have a EU passport, right? So then it assists me in that situation.
Yeah, so you can do this podcast from there.
Could, if I wanted to. It's been a conversation, right? Yeah. That's the thing about it. Because I don't think that it makes sense to stay here, in my personal opinion. That's all it is. That was everyone that was reaching out to me, like, they're just figuring out their exit. I don't know if they want to ride it.
I certainly want to grow my business on both sides of the Canadian-US border. That's my goal at some point when things calm down. Mm-hmm. Just for that reason, there's lots of opportunity down there. I don't know if I would ever sever ties with Canada. I don't think that's part of the plan. My network is here. My family's here. Friends are here. But I could certainly see a time when I'm working in both places and enjoying a different environment in January and February. And right.
I think maybe one of the good things about what's been unfolding recently is you're getting a lot of a younger generation actually asking a lot of questions. They're aware of it a lot more than they were 10 years ago, let's say. Like the 20 somethings, I'm saying.
10 years ago, very few people left.
Yeah, it was a different Canada. Mm. But now you've got those people were 10, 12, 15 years old. Now they're 20, 25 years old. And they're asking some interesting questions. Mm-hmm. And they're trying to figure out, okay, is this my beginning or is this my end of Canada? We don't know. Mm-hmm. But obviously they're going to need to try to figure out, what is my employment? Where am I going to go? What am I going to provide service-wise?
Yeah, a lot of it is opportunity, right? So you still get, you know, if you're a comp sci grad out of Waterloo, someone in California is going to be knocking.
Yep.
Maybe now it's Arizona and Texas too. Who knows? But someone's going to be knocking, say, you want to come down? We'll take care of you. We'll get you the visa. We'll get you the green card eventually and come on over.
You start a life there.
Why not? It's here there'll always be, especially if we have to deal with this housing crisis, there'll be a lot of opportunity still in the construction area. But you have to have people who are, you know, who are willing to do that hard work, the physical work in the winter. It's not an easy life.
No.
Right? So there's opportunity, but you have to just go with the cons of that, right? I mean, you know, I have lots of family and friends in the industry, and they get into their 50s and 60s and the body's broken, and it's a tough life. It's not easy.
We've been saying a housing crisis since, I would say, the early 2000s.
Have you been talking that long as a...
No. I've been talking to friends because it all started out west in BC, right? Mm. That's where the high mortgage, the high value of homes, it was the early 2000s that it started.
Yeah, that was a...
A lot of offshore money coming into here. Yeah. And it was being filtered through there. But people still continue to talk about a housing crisis now. And my professional opinion about the industry, I don't ever see it being solved. I don't ever see... the price of homes going down.
Well, if we keep
immigrating people in.
Right. If we keep increasing our population, it's just going to continue. So even if we do start building faster, dealing with the cost of construction, the development fees, everything, we're still going to struggle to catch up, to keep up.
What I do see, I don't really see, if modular was going to take off in Canada, it would have done it by now.
You think so?
Yeah. Because
as a business person with a manufacturing background, for me, it makes common sense. I've never understood why it didn't take off more.
Because the person doesn't want it.
The person who?
The owner of the modular unit doesn't want it as their permanent residence. They want it as a rental secondary income. They want it as an investment opportunity. They don't want it as a primary residence.
Why is that?
It doesn't have a home connected soul to it. It doesn't, it's a box. Like you can, when you think modular, your first in visual, if you just tell someone, close your eyes, I'm thinking modular. You would love a modular home. They think a box.
But is that in fact true?
Yes and no. Modular hasn't gotten to the point where it's, in my opinion, a home. I've walked through several modular units.
Right.
And the best description I have is it's a portable. It's like walking into a portable. I was educated in portables in schools when I was younger. It's a portable. It's a temporary dwelling. It's not a permanent dwelling. It's easily replaceable. It's easily, if you don't like it, take it out and put a different one on there.
Okay.
That's what modular is to me, and that's not attractive to the end user, I think. What's attractive to them is a home that has character, a home that has history, a home that has details. That's what's attractive to them. But you can't afford that because you're being priced out of those dwellings, right? So those dwellings are only left to a certain few, percentage-wise, probably even single-digit percentage-wise, people can afford those kinds of homes, right? Mm. So your option is modular, but nobody wants them. That's why I don't think Canada's embraced it the same way. I don't think they've sold it correctly, too. Because to make it cost-effective, you have to build it as a box. You know about Boxable, right? The billionaire-designed Boxable where the house just unfolds and then it gets parked.
Right.
Elon Musk was a huge fan of it. He had a unit in Vegas or something like that. He used it as an office, a temporary thing. But again, it's temporary.
Temporary.
It's not a home, in my opinion. It's a dwelling, but it's not a home.
Okay.
So that's why I say that if modular was going to take off, it would have by now, and it's not going to. I think you have to do something different for it to be connected to people, right? But you're going back to people are so used to streaming, subscriptions, membership base, renting a car, Uber, call, like all this. So then I could do the same thing with, it'll be modular Airbnb for permanent residences. I'm going to rent an Airbnb for 6 months. It's a modular unit. I'm going to live in Toronto for 6 months, and then I go somewhere warmer for the other six cold months of the year. So they're not connected to their home anymore. There's no value to that house. So it's going to be a certain price, and it's going to stay that price. Versus a home, you know, always adds value. And it keeps on going up because you've done upgrades to it. Attention subcontractors and skilled trades. Are you looking for your next big opportunity? 2x2 Construction is expanding and is on the hunt to grow our top-tier network of professionals. Whether you're a carpenter, plumber, or roofer, etc., if you can deliver top-quality craftsmanship, offer competitive pricing, and your communication is where we shine, we want to hear from you. At 2x2 Construction, we value strong partnerships. From multiplexes to garden suites, we're all about building better together, and we want you to be a part of it. Reach out today at info@2x2construction.ca or connect with us on Instagram at 2x2 Construction. Join the 2x2 Construction team where great work meets great people. This message is proudly supported by The Construction Life. I think what's going to happen is I think Brampton's already trying to mess with this because they started changing a lot of the bylaws regarding basement dwelling units.
Sure.
They started implementing a rule where you can have so many human bodies now based on a square footage of space in the basement.
Mm-hmm.
No longer about abiding by the building code where it's X amount of people. You can just fit people in 5 square feet.
Right.
So I think what's going to happen is you're going to get homes being converted into the old school European mentality where it's each floor is going to be designed for a different family. So you're basically going to create little mini condos in residential areas. Buy a dwelling for $1.6, $1.7, $2 million, say $2 million.
Right.
Create 4 floors, including the basement. And now you're selling each one of those units for $500,000. And you have a different family living in each one. I see that happening, but that's just density now. And so you've got four vehicles parked in the driveway.
But a lot of that's already happening. It's one extended family.
Yeah. No, but I think it's going to happen with friends, people.
So I haven't seen that yet. And it's an interesting.
You ever hear the story about the kids who bought the school? Some 20-something, no, four
friends.
No, where
was this?
This is in Canada. I can't remember exactly where. I read it somewhere. So they bought an old abandoned school.
Okay.
And then they turned it into a bunch of units. So instead of them buying just an individual house themselves or buying a condo themselves, they took whatever money that they scraped together, yep, and they ended up buying this school for dirt cheap. And then they renovated the whole school into different units. And then they started renting out these units, and it was hugely profitable, right?
Sure.
Because the shitty thing is that families are getting smaller, so schools are being dismantled. Mm-hmm. You don't have the same population in each of the neighborhoods anymore, so then you don't need as many elementary schools or high schools in each area.
Yeah.
What are you going to do with those dwellings, those buildings? You sell them off. Churches is happening the same thing with churches. They're being converted, but unfortunately into higher price point units, mm-hmm, right? So...
Or bars and restaurants.
On the main floor and then dwellings on top. Yeah. Vaulted ceiling and all kinds of stuff. And it used to be a church at some point, right? Mm-hmm. So that's what I see happening. But I mean, is that really going to be sustainable? Are people going to want to stay there for 50 years? Like we knew about our parents that they got attached to their last dwelling or something. I don't know. I think that's dead and buried.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. No, I would still argue that people in Europe are living in much smaller spaces and they make their smaller space a home.
Yeah.
And they're attached to it. They're just doing it in less space. They're just doing without the backyard.
Yeah.
They don't have a barbecue anymore. They live in a flat.
And but that's how their life is. And it was no complaints. We're too big here.
Well, we got used to this.
Yeah.
It's going to be a big adjustment if that's where we're headed. It's just going to be a big adjustment. I think we are moving more towards what Western Europe is like. So we were always kind of midway between the US and Western Europe.
Yeah.
I think we're going to...
More so than us being compared to the US? I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. US is about excess. They're always about huge lots, huge homes.
I don't even mean that. I mean, the U.S. is always going to be an economic machine. Mm-hmm. They're going to grind. You work in the U.S. You have two jobs. I mean, it's all about the grind. I think when, and you mentioned this earlier, when opportunity decreases, why am I going to work the overtime? 60% of it's going to go to the government of every dollar I make in that top bracket. Why would I bother?
There's no
reason.
It's
not going to be enough for me to put a dent into any kind of mortgage anyway. So I'm going to be renting. This is my home. So it's going to start feeling more like Europe. And what I do with my excess cash, rather than worrying about saving for a down payment and buying a home, is I'm going to go on a nice vacation. I'm going to go out to dinner more often. I'm going to, you know, and I won't buy a fancy car. If I really need a car, I'll just buy something to run about in, and that's it. So I think we will, if what's happening now continues, I think we will slide more towards Western Europe is like.
Yeah, I could see that. Well, you got to wonder how it's going to be when all the boomers start to go away, right?
That's going to be a huge wealth transfer.
Yeah.
So that's going to save the next generation.
But it's a question of, will that transfer be taxed?
Oh, I don't know. Don't ask me. Because everything's on the table now. There's been rumblings in the background that the Liberals have... We touched on this before we started the podcast.
Primary residence
capital gains tax. They've it's, you hear it in the wind. Now, it would be political suicide, I think.
If you did it.
Especially right now. But I think you get into the next generation... And I think they may not have a choice. I don't know.
Yeah, because all these boomers in the next, 10, 20 years are going to be passing on. They'll have these dwellings that they've bought the same way that you described with your parents, mm-hmm, back in the day. They're worth a huge amount of money. And then it gets handed down in the family tree. And then if there's a primary residence capital gains tax on that, that's a huge amount of tax on it.
Of course. It will really take away a big chunk of that wealth they were expecting to use to fund a life. But who knows? Who knows?
Yeah, right if now there's just when. It's just the uncertainty. There's just way too... And I think that a majority of people I know, they were just as disappointed with the election results because of the uncertainty. We were hoping for some certainty, something, a little bit of a clear light of direction where things were potentially going to go differently than they've been for the last decade.
Right.
That's what they were disappointed about. Where it's like we were hoping big things with the development reduced, moving construction. All I got the day after was people telling me cancel jobs, clients putting a pause. Everybody is pausing everything. Mm-hmm. We're not spending money. Can you blame them? No, because that's exactly what you should be doing.
You would do the same.
Yeah.
Right? It's a logical choice in the circumstances.
But it stifles construction then. It just like we don't know what we're booking, right? We don't know what to book. Mm-hmm. The only ones that are really working are probably the older trades. They're working well.
What do you mean by the older trades?
They're working. The older 50 plus, 60 plus have clientels that are still committed because they're boomers. They're
right.
Those clientele. Mm-hmm. They have the money. They're secure. They're fine. They need to either renovate or do something or downsize or sell or they bought some other dwelling, whatever. Yeah. But there's work there. The younger trades are having a hard time sustaining what they were so used to projects in the past during COVID days. Mm-hmm. Where when I say projects in the past, I'm talking about like maybe $500,000-$600,000 projects. They're having a hard time getting a $100,000 project greenlit versus the older trades are getting a $600,000 no problem. They keep on adding more of those because they have the relationships and they built it over the years.
Right. Yeah.
So the work is still there.
It's just going to a certain group.
But there's a lot of red lights. Right now, there's a lot of red lights because until we find more certainty, the clients are going to say, let's do this, right? And they don't want to overextend themselves, rightfully so. They shouldn't be.
Hopefully not right now.
We should be protecting ourselves.
But this is what slides you into the recession.
But it's ironic that that's the first thing that the government's doing. They want to just get into more debt. The citizens are pulling back and nervous and not wanting to spend a dollar. But then the government's spending a lot of dollars.
There's a plan. There's an infrastructure plan. There's a big plan. Yeah. That they say is going to pay off.
I don't see it. I've read it. I don't see it. I think it's going to be bad. Bad for construction, I think.
I agree. And I think this is going to continue to move us along this path where the government in Canada is more and more in our lives.
I'm not even a fan of them with the fraction that they are a part of my life.
Yeah, but I just think that they're going to continue. They'll have additional controls. There'll be less media, less free media. They're going to control more of the internet, more access to everything.
Because the younger generation is getting their information from social media. They're not getting their information from mass media, right? That myself included.
Yep.
I stopped paying attention, right? The really scary thing about modular, I know that's going to be the hot topic. Like I love seeing government talk about, you know, labor shortage and we're going to bring in 350,000 new workers into this industry. What about half the workforce that's not working right now? Why are you bringing more people into an industry that's not working? That doesn't make any sense. But they don't have an answer for that one.
But are they actually going to be successful in bringing in those new?
They haven't been successful in bringing in anybody into the construction industry.
Right. It's because, like I mentioned earlier, I think a big part of it is because it's not an easy life. It's a physically demanding job.
It's not a choice. It's not a choice for many.
Right.
Right.
So even if they say we're going to bring in a whole group of newcomers to Canada to work in the construction industry, are they going to say yes and then get here and go work in an office? So even that, great. I don't even know if you're going to achieve your goals.
My question to them would be, how many of those 350,000 are going to stay in construction?
Right.
Have you consulted on that one?
Yeah. They start, they do their thing, they get their papers, they're here, and then they change direction.
Build the future you dream of with Generation Construction. Your home is where life happens, where your style shines, and where your future begins. Whether it's your first home, a space for growing family, or a place all your own, you need a builder who understands your vision and brings it to life. At Generation Construction, they ensure your home is everything you've imagined. Greg, the visionary behind Generation Construction, knows that today's homeowners, they want more than just walls. They want a space that reflects who they are. At Generation Construction, they don't just build houses, they craft homes that are uniquely yours. With a reputation for excellence, trust, and a commitment to working with the best, Generation Construction offers a seamless, stress-free experience that ensures your home stands strong for years to come. Contact Generation Construction today at 705-961-5562 in the Muskoka area and 647-381-0361 in the Greater Toronto area, or visit them at www.generationconstructionltd.com. For inquiries, email Greg at greg@generationconstructionltd.com. Let's build your dream project together. This message is proudly supported by The Construction Life. My concern about, I read something about modular because we brought it up and we talked about it, but the problem is that he has discussed modular, but what he hasn't discussed is the modular units being manufactured in China and shipped over here.
He has not discussed that. Is that a thing?
I know two builders right now that are buying 60% of a home from China, shipped over here, and assembled in Canada.
Well, that's...
This is already happening.
Well, that's definitely not going to move us in the right direction.
Well, that's not going to add to workforce here.
That's what I'm saying. That's not going to...
But that's actually happening.
If we're going to create economic value out of that activity, we have to do it front to back. The whole thing.
I know.
Using our materials, not importing it, engineering, designing, and building it here. Otherwise, where's the value? If we're just doing final assembly.
Because the cost as a business owner is far more profitable to have it produced there and then shipped here and assembled here. It's getting to the point where I've actually seen it in person. I've seen a skid wrapped. That's the kitchen.
Yeah, it's a Lego kit.
IKEA home that's assembled here.
It's an IKEA home assembled.
They're getting to the point where, and this is, I'm going to do a future show on this because he wants to promote this now. Mm. He's already shown me the assembly. He's shown me the factory. It's not even a factory. It's a shipping warehouse. Arrivals from China. This is directly from China. Mm-hmm. So he's more profitable producing it there, shipping it here. Everything is built online. Your clients choose from a short list of selects, and you can't veer off of that. So you choose your kitchen here, your living room here. He joked about how I can put a painting on the wall if you want it. Do you want that wall to have a painting? I can add a light to that wall for that painting if you want.
Yep.
And he says, I can do that. His goal this year is to make it 100%. The whole house arrives here and it gets parked on piers here. It gets assembled here. That's his goal. That's the next step.
A whole kit, ready to go. Frightening.
Rick's looks like a regular, it's all mostly contemporary modern design homes, but it hits all the design buttons that are being catered to the population that wants those designs, whether they're reveals, whether they're light accents, whether they're built-ins, like stories and woodworking, all that stuff, right? It's getting to the point where you take the drawings, you sign off on everything, you can get a dwelling in 3 months. From the time that you finish doing the drawings and you pick your selects, send it to a factory in China, it's produced inside of 3 months and then dropped here and then assembled here. So when you compare it to the way that we do things now, which is average about 12 months to build physical construction, not including design or startups and development fees and permits and all that crap, it's 3 months you're fighting. And guess what? It's cheaper.
It's got to be cheaper.
So he is talking about that kind of modular happening. What I don't like is that it's Brookfield that's going to be mandating it. So you're filling this void of affordable housing, but no Canadians are building these homes. They're assembling these homes. So the workforce that you need to put this house together is not the same workforce.
No, that it's, you not need to build. Skilled it's not a high-skilled labor force.
It's not a new dwelling. Even condos are similarly done that way. Mm-hmm. Each deck is built. windows, cabinets, they all show up, they're on a pallet and they're craned into place and then they're assembled. They're assembling a condo tower. It's technically, if you look at it, that's exactly
it's
what
modular,
it is.
It's modular, sure. A condo tower is modular.
It's a modular application. The only difference is with the home, they figured out how to pack it on pallets a certain way.
Done, wiring's in, plumbing's in, all clips together? Is that what we're talking about? Like,
we
don't need someone to come in and pull wires. It's all there. We're just clipping it together. Fastening the walls, fastening the
where
floor.
Where your sink is, they'll know exactly where the actual supply line's in. So when you arrive on site, you bring your utilities to your dwelling. You know exactly where your hot and cold are, your drains are for your sink, your kitchen sink, for your laundry, for your bathrooms, everything. And you quick connect.
That's it. You plug the water in here. You plug the electricity in here. The drains are here. Done. It is a brilliant way to
business-wise?
Try to resolve and to try to move things faster to
sure
deal with
is.
The housing shortage.
Sure it is.
But to your point, this concept of which Carney talks about, we're going modular. But if the modular is, it's all being done in China and we're just doing final assembly, then we're not actually creating a lot of economic value here.
You don't need a stronger workforce.
No, and we're actually taking away a lot of what's being done now.
I know.
Amazing.
So will you won't even reduce the development charges associated with that because you're still buying a lot of land.
Mm-hmm.
And then so you
still
have
need
to
hook it up.
And
you still need
yeah, exactly. You still got to connect all your utilities. So you're still paying all those fees.
The government will still get its money.
But the funny thing is when he broke it down for me and he looked at it, he goes, man, listen, what's the biggest hurdle on any kind of construction process? It's the time. When you borrow money against time. So if a house takes you 1 year to build, you're carrying the cost of that money over 12 months. But if I can get that house built in 3 months, then you save money because you're not carrying the cost of that borrowing of the money for that structure.
So that's more profitable. Will the prices come down?
No, they'll still stay up because they need to be profitable. So that's, to the so point
that's
where...
That's the kicker, right? That's the problem is in the end, are they going to be more affordable? Probably not.
I haven't walked through one. I'm supposed to be walking through one next month.
Okay.
I want to walk through one. I've seen the 3D mock-ups. I've seen the drawings. I've seen the pallets. I've seen the quality of, I use that word quality loosely, of the cabinetry and everything like that. But it's almost like walking around in a SketchUp. You know what I mean?
Right. But what's the quality look like to you from what you've seen?
IKEA. That's the extent of the quality, I think.
Right.
And when I say that they're producing everything, I'm saying they're producing everything.
Mm-hmm.
So your kitchen countertop with the polishing and the sink and everything assembled and put together, quartz, natural stone, whatever you want, you're choosing on that grocery list on the menu of it, that's what shows up. Mm-hmm. And all you're doing is you're putting some blobs of silicone and you drop it in place in your kitchen. You don't have to template it, go get it produced, fabricated, shipped to site, installed. It's part of the pallet that belongs to the kitchen.
Right. It's part of the Lego kit.
So
the IKEA kit.
They can do it for what my understanding is. I'll give you a reference, so to speak. Let's say they can produce this from China, arrive here in Canada for $170 a square foot. The going rate for building a custom home in Toronto is right nowadays maybe $600 to $700 a square foot.
What about a subdivision builder home?
It's the same price point, but you're still selling it for probably $500 a square foot.
Okay.
That's eventually where he said that's what's going to happen next. It's going to be, he actually just completed four townhome, luxury townhome complexes. They took one lot, severed it into four, and they ordered four units from China. And it arrived. And I said, I want to walk through these units. He goes, you won't be able to tell, Manny.
Mm.
He goes, I hate dust and I hate interest on payments.
Mm.
So I'm eliminating both. I want to assemble everything with minimum amount of dust because you don't have to fabricate everything on site.
Yeah, you're
assembling.
Assembling.
And then you're getting it done far sooner. So then now the carrying costs are far lower, less.
Of course. Yeah,
it's very profitable for any builder who wants to get into it. It's limiting, I think, in clients' eyes because you can only choose so many. He showed me the list of what you can choose.
But even that, Manny, as it evolves,
It'll expand slightly. Slightly, right? It starts to create a wrinkle if you start having clients who want something that's out of the wheelhouse that they've already designed. But he says it's still possible.
Right.
I can still get
well,
you.
I've got to imagine structurally, you can't mess with it. But
no,
probably
it's a fixed.
Right, but yeah. It's a fixed footprint.
Yes.
But probably the accessorization will expand.
There's possibilities to grow that.
Right.
Because not every client's going to want the exact same option. But what's the difference between that and a subdivision? When you go into a subdivision, you're given three or four different tile options, mm-hmm. maybe two options for flooring, paint color, one option. What's the difference? Mm-hmm. He's providing actually more options for you if you think about it.
Yeah, probably. And the quality of the base builder stuff? Is it any different?
It's probably going to be better, in my opinion, on face value. Will it be better? I don't know. I have to walk through it. It's like modular. I have to walk through it.
Right.
But the numbers, as financially speaking, it's insane. But then you've got to fight with China because there's tariffs going on there.
But not for us.
No. But the thing is, now you have this enemy of China, so to speak, right? But now you're producing that product there because they can do it for far cheaper, including shipping costs to bring it here to Canada mm-hmm. instead of producing it here right in our own backyard.
No, that's frightening because that's another value-added industry with high-paying jobs that will start declining, if that's the case.
That's my concern, is that we're going to get rid of a lot of high-paying jobs here in Canada mm-hmm. because it's more profitable for the corporations associated with these
right.
to do it offshore.
So again, more and more, we're going to become like Western Europe.
Yeah.
That's where I really see us going, so...
I got to do the 12 questions with you, Rob.
Oh, yes.
Thanks so much for coming in and depressing everybody.
Yeah, that's like, not trying to make this all sound like a bummer. This is a tough conversation, right?
It's a tough conversation and it will continue. Yep. Like this is going to get posted after the 750 event, but that's the reason why I designed that 750 event is I wanted a room of people to discuss this openly and just,
right.
Let's just get some answers out in the air, right? See what happens, right? Hopefully we get some answers.
Should
out
be
of the
interesting
air.
To see how political it gets.
We'll see. CFO Collective, CFO hashtag
dash,
no,
dash,
hash, dash, dash sorry dash, yeah. CFO dash collective.com. Rob Sinopri. Sinopri.
Yeah.
At CFO dash collective.com, and then on IG recently CFO_collective, and also on IG on LinkedIn. A person you would trade places with for a day.
I originally was thinking when you sent the questions, original Leclerc, I'd love to just drive a Ferrari F1 car for a day. But really, I'd love to be Putin for a day.
He's not, you know what?
Just to see
he's
what
been expressed a few times, eh?
What's that?
He's been expressed that question a few times.
Just to see what his life is like. Could you imagine? Because even Elon Musk says that he is the richest man in the world, not Elon, and he's much more powerful because he has an army. Elon doesn't, right?
He would be an interesting person too.
Now listen, that's not saying I think the guy's a great guy. That's at all. I mean,
It
would just be interesting to see what it would be like to have that kind of power. Yeah.
Guilty pleasure.
Honestly, Ruffles potato chips. Because they're poison and I just can't stop eating them.
Can't just have one, right?
No, the bag's gone. It doesn't matter what size it is. It's bad.
There's too much air in the bags nowadays, huh?
Shrinkflation.
I know. What is your least favorite tool?
A torque wrench, because someone has to show me how to use one properly.
Really?
Yeah. I'm an accountant, man. Like, I can't figure out how to use these damn things.
Nobody said that one. Okay. Biggest risk you ever took?
Probably walking away from my full-time teaching professor job at Humber to do this full-time was probably the biggest risk I took.
How long
aside
ago
from getting married.
Okay.
Which is
that's
a big risk. Well, it's a big risk for anyone. You're choosing that person. That's the most important choice you make in your life. So that was a big risk. Now, it turned out amazing. I would never change a single thing. I hope she's listening.
Well, I thought you were talking about leaving school.
No, I wouldn't change that either. But that was a big risk, right? Because it was a very good paying job, very stable. Now I have to kill what I eat. So it's a big risk.
Good for you. Best compliment you ever got?
Best compliment I ever got was probably that I have Irrational confidence.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Favorite beverage?
Red wine.
Domestic or foreign or?
Well, I'm biased.
Okay.
I'm biased. I like wines from all over, but if you make me choose, it's going to be Italian.
I'm a European wine. I love it too, right?
I'm biased.
So. Mind you, I was just in Turkey and I brought back two bottles and I'm curious to find the right time to open them up.
Yeah.
Try them out. But worst piece of advice, or sorry, what never fails to make you laugh?
I can see a Seinfeld episode for the fifth time and still laugh my fucking ass off. Like, just, it's just
been so long since they went off the air, huh?
They're still on.
No. I mean, but when they were doing.
Yeah, when they're making them. Oh,
it's like 20 years now.
I guess I can't. It's been a long time.
It's been a long
time. And yet,
still funny.
Still funny.
Still funny. Worst piece of advice you ever got?
Don't. So whatever you do, go get a job and a career. Don't have your own business.
Yeah, I know.
And that was not necessarily good advice.
What profession other than your own would you like to attempt one day?
Oh, well, I'll never attempt it, but I would have loved to have been an airline pilot. That was my dream when I was a kid, but my eyesight, it was a non-starter from
day one. Yeah.
So.
Favorite curse word?
Oh, the F word. It's just so flexible and malleable and useful.
Versatile. Any situation. Versatile. Yeah. What is your favorite vehicle? Any mode of transportation?
Again, I wanted to be a pilot, so I love flying. Love airplanes.
Like commercial flight or you?
I wanted to be an airline pilot.
Yeah, but do you like the fighter jets kind of thing?
I actually love airliners because they're so, like, a fighter jet is a thing. It's purpose built, but these airliners are just magnificent machines that do incredible things. They move. They take me to Florida. I love them, right?
They are. It's pretty impressive. You get in, you come out, and you're in a different
place. Well, when I was at Honeywell Aerospace, I got the opportunity to go over to France, go to Airbus, go into the factory where they make the double-decker A380s. The most fucking incredible thing you've ever seen in your life. Walking on these things as they're under construction. 5,000 kilometers of wires. Like, just, it was unbelievable. Like, and then when you see it take off at a Pearson, you see the wings just bend, and it's unbelievable.
That's a sight.
Yeah.
Last question. If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at those pearly gates?
On balance, we'll let you in anyway.
Rob, thanks so much, man. Pleasure seeing you again. I really appreciate you coming in
and recording,
sitting down. And then we'll see you on the event there on Sunday, man.
See you on Sunday. Looking forward to it.
Thanks very much, man.
Yeah, we're out of here.